how to breathe.
I'm doing that for my own benefit, man.
Welcome to Open Source with Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and that was a little piece of off-mic stuff that you heard there, but I'm still going to strive to be a high-quality person, as we do every week. Breathing exercises or no, you know?
The only lead high-quality people broadcast on CFRU.
Exactly. At least from 5 to 6 on Thursday.
Open Sources. Ooh. It's CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. Today, he made us do it. Donald Trump Jr. met with the Russians and lied about it, so we have to talk about it. Russian collusion is the issue that just won't go away for President Donald Trump, no matter how hard he tries, and we've got to talk about it. Then, more troubles on the Trump front, indeed trouble for us all. North Korea took a giant leap to having its own nuclear missiles a couple of weeks ago, and it seems like no one can do anything about it. So what should the world's powers be doing, and what does North Korea ultimately want? And then, finally, the state of the Canadian media. Government is presently mulling options for a possible bailout of sorts or some kind of government support going forward. But should the government make such a move? First of all, though, it's a controversy's controversy, I think. The government last week issued an apology and a settlement payment of $10.5 million to Omar Khadr, who you may recall as was a child soldier wounded in Afghanistan during a firefight at what was allegedly an Al-Qaeda compound. This was in summer 2002. He was picked up, taken to Guantanamo, where he languished for the next 13 years, being subjected to what is lovingly called rendition and enhanced interrogation. He confessed to killing an American soldier and injuring another, and was tried and convicted more or less in secret in 2010. He was finally brought back to Canada in 2015, where he was more or less released ROR on his own recognizance. He's lived with his lawyer, and I think he only recently moved out of his lawyer's house. But Scotty, this debate, it just, you know, this settlement, it seems to be split between the fact some people consider how Khadr was treated was kind of a national betrayal of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And then on the other side, you have people attacking the Prince of Selfies for helping a terrorist win the lottery.
Yeah, this goes back to the whole split. It's not really a split. What was said more than once, I think, when did Trudeau say a Canadian is a Canadian is Canadian? It wasn't to do with this. It was, I can't remember.
I think that was about the conservative plan to, like, take the Canadian citizenship away from people accused of terrorism.
Yes, so it's a similar narrative. And it is obviously a very polarizing debate has emerged from this. Even the people that will admit to that it's fairly clear that Khadr's rights were violated. Mm-hmm. They don't like this amount of 10 million. They have a problem with this 10 million. Now, interestingly, the government hasn't admitted to that's the amount. At least I don't think they have yet. For the past few days, it's been like they haven't said the number. Mayor Harar, who was also, we'll say in a similar situation, and that there was rendition involved, and he ended up back in Syria. Back in 2002, when things were heightened, I guess, after 9/11, was also paid $10.5 million. It seems to be the amount. Now, it's been implied that had this gone on and to higher court as an actual trial, it's believed that Arar would get much more money, or at least that's what's been implied. I think I heard as high as $40 million in one estimate, simply because of what happened. As you said, child soldier rights completely violated. So, was he a child soldier or was he a hardened terrorist murderer? I don't know. And one of the things that's been making the rounds, it was disturbing, but yet probably needs to be seen, were the pictures of Khadr after this battle. Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of times in social media, talk about a trigger warning. That picture of Khadr lying in a pile was just unbelievable. Going through that and then onto everything else that happened to him. Going to Guantanamo where the regular rules didn't apply. He was charged with a charge I don't think even really exists, something that they made up. It wasn't even trumped up. It was just like, it was something that's not...
Well, he was charged with, like, murder. I can't remember the exact term, but it's like murder outside the rules of war.
But it's not
like that.
It's not real, though.
It's like super murder. Yeah.
You couldn't get charged walking downtown Guelph of that. Like, it's not possible, right?
No, and I'm not sure how you would even be charged of such a thing in The Hague if it was like if they took you to the war crimes tribunal in The Hague. It's one of these things that they came up with after 9/11 to super prosecute people they didn't like or people who did bad things but felt that regular laws weren't enough.
So the breaking news this afternoon was that there was an appeal put to the court in Ontario I think we spoke about them last week, the widow of one of the soldiers was killed, and they had supposedly won a settlement in I think it was Utah of $134 million. They were trying to put a stop to any payment to Cotter's $10.5 million, and that's just been quashed. It's like, no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So they can only do that if somebody is, you know, if it's going to be, oh, they're hiding it from somebody or, you know, I think it's usually to do with maybe the marital things where you know that somebody's, or business where somebody's, there's a swindle going on, and that's obviously not the case in this case.
Right.
So the $10.5 million. But the way I was looking at it, too, is that it hasn't really been explained or whatever, or come up, at least I haven't heard it, is that Connor's probably, he says he wants to be a nurse. In terms of his future, in terms of being employable or anything, I don't really know if he has a future in that department. I get the feeling that he's going to have to live off of this money unless somebody gives him a break. Like, not only is this, payment well due, I think, for what happened to him, but also it's like, I think he's going to have to live off of this forever because, you know, it's the kind of name you see it on a resume and say, well, you know, I mean, it's possible somebody might give him a break if he really does want to be a nurse, but...
Well, he was taken to Afghanistan when he was 11.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
a kid.
Yeah, his father took him there. So one wonders what kind of education he had between ages 11 and 14 or 15, how old he was when the war broke out.
So if it was Islamist education, it wasn't very good, obviously, right? Like, there's no...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I do wonder, first of all, how far his education got. Second of all, I doubt there was a prison library in Gitmo. I think the best you can hope for is soccer in a concrete cage. Yeah, so then he comes to Canada. I don't know what he's been doing education-wise since, but he probably has to start with getting whatever the Canadian equivalent of a GED is, of getting your high school certificate. That's the first one. Plus, he's been under pretty much house arrest for the last couple of years. Like I said, he's had to live with his lawyer, and he's only been allowed out with certain restrictions. Mm-hmm. If he wants to do that, I do applaud him. Certainly a worthwhile profession, but I do wonder, like you said, I mean, could he do that? Would it be possible to chase a sort of a normal educational curricula? You know, he might be in his 40s by the time he might finally become a nurse.
Yeah.
So yeah, I you do make a good point about the money he's lived. But second of all, where did this like $134 million number come from? Because it's just crazy. Like, how are you going to get $134 million out of a guy who spent 15 years in prison, starting from the age of 15, with like no education?
That's the kind of settlement that comes from the land of litigation, right?
Well, exactly.
Maybe they're hoping that the government would cough that up just to make it go away or whatever.
Oh, possibly.
But it's also one of those ones where they ask for $134 million and then presumably Cotter or somebody would go to court there and say, well, I've only got 10. They'd be like, okay.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking would happen. It's never going to be solved. You know, Cotter will never ever set foot in the United States without getting taken down. He's pretty much trapped in Canada.
Not that he'd want to.
No, well, exactly. No, that was Spear, right? Chris Spear. That's just
Chris Spear was the name of the soldier who was killed, and there was Lane Morris who was. He says he was injured, although from what I've seen, there's like conflicting reports that he was taken out of the battlefield like 4 hours before Spears was killed. But yeah, he's also a part of this too, and part of the suit, the $134 million suit, and then part of the suit to try and stop Cotter from getting the settlement.
And that's the thing. I mean, war is war and war is hell, obviously, and things happen regardless of the age of the participants. But this, you know, people seem to be sympathetic for, say, a child soldier that escapes the Lord's Resistance Army, which is a Christian-based movement.
Or any
or,
cult for that
or
matter.
The Hitler Youth or whatever. It's like somebody who's young. There's that famous picture of those kids fighting for the Nazis in World War II, obviously not by choice, just bawling their eyes out. I mean, this is young people, right? So it seems that Qatar has become some kind of symbol for the, or these are the right wing is trying to make, you know, a symbol of liberal ineptitude. What's going on? Scheer calling it disgusting, and a lot of the commentary coming, most of the commentary coming from talk radio, which I've heard parroted from other people. It's like rah, 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 rah. Angus Reid poll said 71% of Canadians disapprove of the payout. I guess that's 71% of people with landlines disapprove of the.
Well, I also
payout.
I also have huge problems with how that poll was phrased, because it was. The question was, do you agree...
He's getting too much money, isn't he? Yes.
How it was done, or do you think that the government should have taken it through the full court process? Which doesn't say that people either agree with the decision or don't agree with the decision. It says people either don't agree with the decision or they don't agree with the tack that the government took. So you're offering two negative choices. So... there's a number of ways to read this, including the 64% of the people who identified as NDP answering it was the wrong decision. That seems a bit bizarre.
91% of conservatives.
91%,
which is not surprising.
It makes sense, given the reaction.
Oh, sure.
But 64% of the NDP. That seems like a really big number for people who identify as New Democrats. But, I mean, so this is a very problematic poll, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's gotten his $10.5 million. He's obviously not going to give it back. I think this is there'll be a flurry of chatter about this. It's quite possible, we've said with Arar and Qatar, that this has happened before. Something interesting that came up today, I was talking to some other people about it, and somebody had mentioned other people... Slightly different tack in terms of the wrongly accused, but there were settlements in those. It was, you know, somebody had said, oh, Stephen Truscott didn't get anything. I think Stephen Truscott did get a settlement eventually. So
I think so.
When,
let me check.
Yes. I'm nearly certain. I'm not sure what the number was, but I remember the reveal. And that's quite a few years ago now. But compensation goes almost without saying in situations like these, whether it's the Qatar situation or something domestic. I mean, there are lots of people that are...
You got $6.5 million.
$6.5 million. There you go.
So I mean, there's a world of difference.
But that was
a Trump change either.
Yeah, and that was a few years ago too.
Yes.
But similar though, he was in jail for I think it was 10 years here in Guelph.
And on death
row.
And
there's Milgaard, 30 years. You know, you can take it or leave it. But the number of years is mind boggling in some cases. But it goes without saying that there has to be some sort of remuneration for these people, right?
Well, it does. I mean, what I think people should focus on, I think a lot of conservatives want to phrase this as he won the lottery. He's, you know, we're rewarding terrorists and from this angle. And I think the more appropriate angle to think of is, if is it really winning the lottery if you're in a black site for 15 years?
No.
And tortured and given sleep deprivation and God knows what else happened to him and, you know, having to sleep under bright lights. Is that really the equivalent of going to 7-Eleven and getting a scratcher?
No.
No, of course not. Would you want to be tortured for 15 years and then be convicted and tried in a kangaroo court?
And he'll pay for it for the rest of his life, too.
Yeah.
And I think I flubbed it. Remuneration, I meant. Regardless.
And he has health issues resulting from his detention.
He must have.
I think I read that. I don't know for sure.
Beyond PTSD and everything else that goes with that. I mean, if that photo is remotely untouched that I saw of him, it's like... He's going to be, and it's amazing how calm and reserved he seems. Anytime I've seen him speak, he doesn't seem. Obviously, it's had his effects, but you know, are people expecting some kind of like rabid guy to come on the screen and go, wah, you know, like
I don't know what
you would almost expect that considering what he's been through. But he seems like a very gentle person. I don't think he's going to be any threat to anybody at all.
And so. I also don't think I've ever heard him make any public statement about getting a settlement from the government. I don't think he's ever talked publicly about that in an interview or a scrum or anything. He hasn't come out and said, like, I demand compensation for my, you know, detainment or anything like that. And
I think his tack has been that it's like, well, this sort of, you know, clears his name a little bit, really.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, actually. Should do, but and obviously in the eyes of a lot of people, it's going to be like,
not with the people who are putting signs on their restaurant calling Justin Trudeau Prince Selfie and he's rewarding terrorism. But I mean, those people are kind of on the extreme.
And the minimum wage is too damn high. Yeah. Those people.
That's right.
Know them well.
I think the important argument is, you know, that your rights are your rights are your rights. I think that's kind of a Karachian spin I'm putting on this. But and that's what Justin Trudeau has said. That's what Jody Wilson-Raybo has said. And I want to point out this number, too. According to the Attorney General and the Minister of Justice, $5 million in legal fees the government spent fighting to stop having to compensate Cotter in court.
It's like they automatically fight these things, and no matter who it is, like, well, we need to go.
I guess, but yeah. I mean,
that's burning
this
money.
Went to court three times, and they lost every time, and it was pretty inevitable. And so when you take the 10.5, add the 5, in, you know, when you consider his number was like 20.
Did those challenges start under the Harper Conservatives?
Yeah.
Of course they did.
I mean, it's worth pointing out that Chrétien and Martin were prime minister during
this
time as well.
That long.
And, you know, they didn't do anything either.
No.
And that's a fair point. But on the other hand, Martin and Chrétien are on the phone to the soldier's widow and to Spears's widow and to the other soldier apologizing like Stephen Harper is.
Right.
And they don't have no media organization on behalf of Omar Khadr is trying to raise money for him, like Ezra Levant is trying to for the soldiers' families.
Yes.
Anyway, that's another story.
Probably another day. We'll get back to the rebels one of these days. Probably.
Speaking of loudmouths, down in the United States, we try not to talk about Trump. We, you know, he kind of, and that's purposeful.
The air is being sucked from the room.
No, it is. Yeah. And he does kind of suck.
Let's talk about the Junior room. Then. Junior. Trump Junior.
Junior. Doju. Fredo. He. hey, we're not the only ones calling him Fredo. Apparently, that's like pretty much a Secret Service nickname at this point. But yeah, so the New York Times doing good reporting as they have.
Fake news. Sorry. I love the New York Times. Sorry.
It's just, yeah, that's impulsive at this point. Yeah. It's just like, here, New York Times,
it's not
fake
real
news. No, so they were digging and they discovered that Donald Trump Jr. took a meeting alongside then campaign chair Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner, the ubiquitous Jared Kushner, with a Russian lawyer who sent, she didn't send the email. And this is where it's like kind of like crazy convoluted. But this music promoter from Russia who has a client who has a billionaire father who's in the government sent Donald Jr. an email that said that the singer's father was in the meeting with the quote-unquote crown attorney of Russia, which doesn't exist.
Crown attorney.
That there was some significant dirt on Hillary Rodham Clinton that the Russians had, and Donald Trump Jr. was like, sounds dope. I'm going to bring Paul and Jared over, and we're going to check it out. And this is kind of where things get wonky, because apparently there was something of a bait and switch. According to Doju, Donald Trump Jr., that she wanted to talk about the Russian adoption because of the Russians clamped down on Americans adopting orphaned Russian children after, I think it was after the murder of a journalist in Russia. That was one of the sanctions that was put on. This was before Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, this thing called fake news that Donald Trump's been accusing the Russian collusion story of kind of fell apart this week, because it turns out that Donald Trump Jr. and his brother-in-law and the chairman of the campaign met with Russians last June.
And it started off that he denied. This is the usual, you know, Jr., that's one of those apple doesn't fall far from the tree cases where he denied it. And then he did this thing where he released all the emails, like, I don't know, was it minutes before the New York Times let it go? This also hints at somewhere the really high-profile leak. somebody's getting hold of this stuff, and who knows who could it be? We don't know yet. I'm sure it will come out.
I have heard a conspiracy theory that Kushner was the leak on this. So
Kushner, because Trump said he doesn't know very well or something. Wasn't that today? He's like, I don't really know him. He's your son-in-law. You don't know him?
Well, he's also pretty much handed over control of the White House to Jared Kushner. You know, Jared Kushner is in charge of China relations and fighting the opioid epidemic. And
so how could he possibly not know him? This is where it's getting... can it get any more weird? I don't know. So, yeah, and I was going to say Trump seems to be more concerned, I think, about what the media perception is of his son, as is the same with him, as rather than like what actually happened, right? Is like what's the media coverage of my boy? That was my comment off the top about him being a high my son's a high quality person. Like that, it sounds like a sales job. Like you're pointing at a Cadillac and saying, "This is a high quality car. This Trump Jr. is a high quality person." This is mind blowing, and yet somehow they lumber on. And I remember we were talking about it before, how it reminded me of the 4 days where all of this stuff goes on, and you think that's going to bring him down. I mean, there was great comic making the rounds. I think it was in the New York Times, of people standing under a bombed out whatever and a picture of Trump saying obey, and it was like and it's like, I can't believe that this didn't bring him down. And you know, meanwhile the apocalypse is happening. You mentioned sanctions. This is something that was discussed at the G20, to sort of back up a little bit and just talk about senior, in terms of Putin and Trump had a chat that was only supposed to be for a little bit of time, and it went on for a couple hours.
Yeah,
and that's going back to the sanctions over the Ukraine about expelling the diplomats and the seizure of properties and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it seems that Russia is sort of piping up and saying that they're going to do the same. So there's quite a bit of tension there. Now it sounds like there's going to be some talks in St. Petersburg later this month to try and resolve it and maybe throttle back. And of course, I think if that happens and it gets wide coverage, this issue is going to keep surfacing. You've got Trump Jr. and obviously it sounds like alleged collusion with the Russians. I don't know how it goes from an adoption thing to I've got dirt on Hillary. And it's like, what was this quote? I love it. You know, if this is what you got. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
It's you know, that's not your way of saying, oh no, I don't think I really don't think I should do this because it violates probably the Constitution, among other things.
Well, it certainly violates election rules because you're not allowed to take anything from foreign powers, whether they're friendly or not, let alone the fact that Russia isn't particularly friendly. But yeah, it's violation of election rules. Mm-hmm. That they can't do this. And
yeah, it's supposed to be brown envelope, and you don't talk about it. You don't email about it, and you don't text somebody about it, right?
But the defense of it
is, you go on the tour and do it that way.
Yeah, right? The defense of it is startling. Well, you don't want to talk to these people about a computer, because the publicist who was at the meeting, his name is Ron Goldstein. He checked into Trump Tower when he was there for the meeting on Facebook. So if you're trying to be if you're trying to do stuff in secret, you probably don't want to check into Facebook. Check into the place where you're doing secret stuff on Facebook.
Checking into Kremlin for meeting, yes.
I mean, yeah. You know, you don't have to watch a James Bond movie to know that you don't do that.
You see him on Google Maps waving.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, hey, it's the Google Maps car. Everybody wave.
Yes, hey. Jared, it's you. Yeah,
Jared. Well, there are a couple of other things. First of all, I mean, this is further knocks against Jared, who was already having meetings with Russian officials that he did not disclose on his forms to get his security clearance. He has a high-level security clearance, being a high-level White House employee. And here's another meeting where he met with Russian officials who were claiming to be there on behalf of the Russian government, did not say this on his security clearance forms. And you had Debbie Wasserman Schultz today bring forward a motion in committee. It's like his security clearance should be revoked at the bare minimum. And of course it failed because it's a Republican led committee. But it's startling. And then on top of it all, both Jared Kushner and his wife Ivanka Trump, both White House advisors at a time when the White House is in crisis, are in this Allen & Company conference in Sun Valley, California, or Sun Valley, Arizona. Either way, there's this high-level conference where a bunch of billionaires get together, and it's called the Allen & Company conference, and they're there right now. So they can just, like, skive off from the White House whenever they frickin' feel like it.
Because the billionaires are having a meeting.
Well, yeah, I mean, but this is just as they did in April. And somebody pointed this out last night on the news, like one of the news networks I was watching, that they're gone, just like they were in April when the White House was in the middle of another crisis. And that was when all this talk was about, is Sean Spicer going to be replaced? Is Reince Priebus going to be replaced? Is Steve Bannon going to be replaced?
And Spicer just seems gone. To have been replaced with Huckabee, right? She seems deputy dog, but she's actually... No, I don't... Deputy Dog was a cartoon, folks. Sorry.
I know. But Sean Spicer's doing double duty right now because he's also the interim...
I haven't seen him. The quotes seem to come from Huckabee.
I know, but he's the interim communications director now, too, because they can't get anyone to fill that job. So, yeah, it's this is like smelly all over. And then on top of it all, you had... You had the first confirmation hearing for the White House, for the new FBI director yesterday. Yeah. And you had, like, they had to, like, pretty much lead him by the nose to get to the answers people want to hear. And there was this great moment with Lindsey Graham who was, like, trying to, you know, like, it was like that scene from The Simpsons where the witness protection people are trying to get Homer to do the Mr. Thompson, and they're stepping on his foot.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I say, hello, Mr. Thompson, you smile and nod. And it was exactly like that. Lindsey Graham was sitting there like, if somebody from a foreign country comes to me with political information on my enemy, I want you to tell us all that we should go to the FBI. And then Christopher Wray was like, yeah, if that happens, you should go to the FBI. And I was just like, first of all,
oh boy.
First of all, anyone taking this job after what happened to the last guy is automatically suspicious, in my opinion, because you know what you've got to do to keep the job now. And it doesn't involve questioning the boss. And then there was another segment. I didn't watch a lot of it.
No.
But I did watch a bit of it. And somebody asked, one of the Democrat senators asked him, if the president asked you to meet one-on-one, would you? And he was like, well, it depends on the circumstances. You know, it might be a national security thing. And I'm like, you're an idiot. What kind of answer is that? What kind of national security crisis would have to involve a meeting just between the FBI director and the president and wouldn't involve somebody from the NSA, the National Security Agency, or the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, or a section chief from the FBI, or several section chiefs from the FBI who supervise those files? There's no way a president... I don't think there's an acceptable circumstance.
Maybe if Saks Fifth Avenue stopped carrying Ivanka's handbags or something.
Oh, my
goodness. That could be a good reason. Do you see that great Photoshop making the rounds of Ivanka filling in for Roosevelt at Yalta? Oh, my God. It's so good.
Well, that's almost another topic altogether.
Yes.
It's just like, she's just like...
It's fantastic stuff. Donald's not feeling so good, so we'll send Ivanka to the high-profile world leader meeting elected people.
I mean, it's worth noting that, you know, it's not unusual for world leaders to step away, but usually the person who steps in is like the foreign minister or the secretary of state or something like that. It's not the daughter. It's not the daughter or the husband or the wife.
But she's high quality, right?
Oh,
she's not high quality. I don't know.
Oh, we've got some Hulk high quality stuff coming up, so you should stay tuned for that. We're going to play some PSAs and then some music, and then we'll be right back with two more topics that are in the news. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to the CFRU 93.3 FM. You can't make no panic if you ain't got no dough. You can't make no deal if you ain't got no soul. Can't turn the other cheek, cause now you know this ain't a new story. These are friends that I know. You can't make no panic if you ain't got no dough. Can't make no deal if you ain't got no soul. Can't turn the other cheek, cause now you know this ain't a new story. These are friends I know. Aperebonga, aperebonga. Ain't no tongue in a lunga, ain't no tongue.
There's a taste of a band that will be playing Hillside Festival this weekend. Yes, unless you've been asleep for 20 years. The Hillside Festival is this weekend this year, July 14th to 16th at Guelph Lake Island. I believe there's still day passes available, but the weekend passes are sold out. You might be able to get one online. So anyway, come and visit me Sunday at noon at the CFRU booth in the community tent. Be glad to talk community radio with you. But more about the Jerry Cans. They sing in Inuktitut. They're from the north and one of the many, many bands that we'll be playing. I think they're playing at least on three occasions on the weekend, if I'm not mistaken. So if you're there for any of the days, you'll be able to see them. So,
well, there you go. All the day passes are still available.
Every one of them.
Yeah, Friday. You can get a pet day pass for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
All of them are still available. They've sold none. No.
Well, I don't know if they sold. No. They've probably sold some.
We gave some away last week,
you can still buy them.
I hope so.
Jeez. Talk about Debbie Downer over here, man.
I think all the passes. I don't know. We'll see you there anyway. Come see me on Sunday, 12 to 2. I'll be at the booth and we'll talk shop. I'll give you a CFRU sticker. You can put it on your guitar case, your ukulele case.
Well, speaking of the world coming to an end, the North Koreans just have been kind of going missile crazy this year. They've been firing missiles left, right, and center. This latest one, the Hwasong 14, they thought it was just another missile, but it turns out it's like a two-stage rocket, which means it's technically an ICBM. Although the initial reports that sort of had people freaking out have sort of been taken back a little. The South Koreans are saying that the North Koreans don't have anywhere to test reentry, which is kind of key because, you know, you have to send something, you send it up, you want it to come back down and hit the place you're aiming for. But still, it's pretty scary because the North Koreans seem to be just a couple of years away from having ICBMs capable of launching nuclear missiles that could strike Alaska, Hawaii, perhaps even Washington, Oregon, California, mainland USA. Predictably, this has garnered a strong reaction from the U.S. president, who promised, quote, severe options, as well as very strongly going to confront North Korea over the missiles. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it just sounds like he doesn't know what to do. And I think that's a common problem here.
Yeah, he also said that maybe China will put a heavy move on them, as if it's some kind of wrestling deke. That's a quote from Twitter. It's
that
like,
must
maybe
be.
China will give them a heavy move. China's are really the only country in the area that are friendly, let's say, with North Korea, although that seems to have, that comes and goes too. They sort of ice each other out every once in a while. And also very interesting kind of side article about this in, I believe it was the famous New York Times, about how North Korea gets a lot of their, you know, their let's call it hard currency from African nations.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend a lot of time there. It sounds like arms go from North Korea to whoever. And another one of their exports is building giant statues of dictators despots, let's call them.
Go with what you know.
And yeah, and they get they get cash from that. Ones that were mentioned were Namibia, Eritrea, Congo. So if you're wondering where they're getting the cash from, it's from this Soros, I guess. And it sounds like they send the equivalent of temporary foreign workers there as well. It's really wild.
Yeah, that was another thing is that I think that was New York Times, too, that there's North Koreans who are practically enslaved in Russia right now.
I didn't hear that one.
Yeah,
it's not surprising.
It's pretty terrible when you think about it.
Yeah, the hard currency has to come from somewhere.
But it shows how little, you know, they kind of think of their people, which is, I think there's some confusion in certain circles that you can deal with North Korea in the same way you can deal with Iran. Iran was kind of strong-armed through sanctions to try and reach an agreement with the West about canceling their nuclear plan, which eventually was reached and does appear to be working. But on the other hand, with Iran, you have you do have a middle-class population in Iran. They have access to media, and not just Iranian state media. They are sort of aware of their place in the world, and to an extent, there's an affection for Americans,
yep,
in or at least American culture, in Iran. you're not going to get that in North Korea, because unless you are near the cream of the crop in terms of the central leadership, most North Koreans live in, you know, you want to talk about bombing people back to the Stone Age? Most North Koreans are already there.
And that's one of the key differences, I think, because Iran would be more likely to have some semblance of diplomacy with the U.S., whether it's a back channel or very quietly, whereas, I mean, they don't call North Korea the hermit kingdom for nothing, right? It is, they are definitely on their own, volatile. It sounds like Kim Jong-un has taken personal control back of the decision-making for a while. Kim Jong-il had kind of farmed it out. His dad farmed it out to, I'm probably mixing up my sons and eels and uns.
No, you had it right.
I had it right. There you go. I should stick with the program, I guess. But Kim Jong-un called the missile an Independence Day gift to, and this is a direct quote, the American bastards. Mm. So it's not as if you're really wanting to, you're not, just, it used to be that North Korea would do this sort of rattle the saber and then they would kind of get what they wanted. It's like, well, we need shiploads of grain, and if you don't, we're going to do this and do that. Right. They also, in addition to this, the nukes changes the dynamic and, you know, adds them to that very small group of people that have nuclear capability, group of countries. It seems they've got about 21,000 pieces of artillery just pointed at South Korea, conventional weapons.
Right.
So if that becomes uncorked, never mind the nuke that could potentially hit Los Angeles or Hawaii or whatever, maybe if it flies that day, you know, the conventional weapons is a massive threat. Just South Korea, Tokyo is probably within reach of that. So,
well, they have the missile technology they have right now could certainly hit the Japanese islands. Mm-hmm.
So it sort of adds to, you know, that the term people going ballistic. I mean, this is a true rendering of going ballistic. So, it's looking like unless there is this, hopefully not, a tantrum or a complete freakout from North Korea, the only way that this is, they need to get diplomatic about it through some channel, whether it's the Chinese, which seems to be a door that's just opened a crack, and perhaps some lifting of the sanctions that have been imposed on them, because this is total stalemate. Like, it's not going to go anywhere unless they start talking with somebody to some degree, or they're just, you know, it's not going to get any better.
Yeah, well, in China,
there's a downer. You won't talk about that's a downer, but it's true though.
And China's concern, of course, is that if there's any kind of conventional war, you know, let alone nuclear war, as you said. Well, they're in, but not only that, but you know, even if they're out, they're going to have to deal with, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of North Koreans pouring over their border, creating a refugee crisis there, because the only country that North Korea borders other than South Korea is China.
Yeah, and that is the current path out for people that want to escape North Korea. It's the smuggler's route. So
there's
a couple of fantastic documentaries about that, and very, very telling as to life inside North Korea, which seems to be almost otherworldly. It's not just a closed society like the East Bloc nations were, that, you know, you could send radio signals across the border probably, and they had TV in lots of places. Smuggle your Beatles records. I mean, this North Korea is like the wall.
There's this documentary, I think it's on Netflix, but it's called Chuck Norris Saves the World, and it's about it's about smuggled 80s action movies in one of the communist countries in Eastern Europe, and how there was like an interpreter at the embassy who they would smuggle around town to dub these English tapes into whatever language
He did all the voices?
Yeah, well, she did all the voices.
She did all.
Yeah,
them.
It's a fascinating story. But yeah, that was, they do credit that somewhat to a limited degree of, you know, how the Iron Curtain fell. There's nobody smuggling tapes in to North Korea because of, you know, it's crazy. You see footage of journalists who sort of go in under the cover of other means, but they take the dash cam video and they drive around Pyongyang and it's dead. It's the major metropolitan city, capital city of North Korea, and it's dead there.
Or those satellite pictures where there's no lights. There's lights in Pyongyang, and there's lights over.
There's like some light in Pyongyang, but it looks like it's a big empty between South Korea and China. Yeah, it's nuts there. And but it comes back to this question, like, what do they want? What does Kim Jong-un want? Or is he just nuts? And if that's the thing, if he just wants to be like the Kim Jong-un caricature that he was in, like, in a movie like The Interview, or like how his father was portrayed in Team America World Police, yes. Where he's just like kind of wants to be a crazy Bond villain on his own in North Korea somewhere. How do you deal with that? How do you reach a diplomatic settlement with somebody like that, especially when the United States is being led right now by someone who is not known for his diplomacy, let's say? And then on top of that, what are the options? Well, conventional war, again, that creates all sorts of problems. Like, Seoul is within spitting distance of North Korea. That's gone. So you're creating a huge crisis in South Korea. You're creating a huge crisis in the Asian theater. Refugees streaming into China by the millions.
I was just going to say, wouldn't it be something if Dennis Rodman was the one to solve it? He famously went back there... years ago?
Yeah, things are just crazy enough in the world right now that I wouldn't be surprised if Dennis Rodman comes out like, good news, everyone, Kim Jong-un's going to disarm. I reached a deal with them. I'm going to create an NBA in North Korea, NKBA.
I'd like to say that stranger things have happened, but if that's what it takes, then by God, Dennis Rodman, it's time. Never mind Chuck Norris.
Well,
Mr. Basketball will save us.
I think that was like the plot of like a Harlem Globetrotters meets Scooby-Doo or something. But the basketball saves the world. But there's also like there was apparently a moment a couple of weeks ago where they could have assassinated Kim Jong-un. But that would just destabilize North Korea just as easily.
If there's no contender and there's a vacuum there, look out.
Which leaves the only other option is to just let them get nukes and keep your fingers crossed that mutually assured destruction is going to hold. Is that a good option?
No.
Anyway, we didn't solve
it. For another day. That needs more than 15 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or 12 minutes, whatever our cutoff is. What is this topic? But anyway, let's go.
Well, we do want to address this, the Canadian media landscape. And the reason we wanted to bring this up this week is there's actually going to be an article in this weekend's Globe. It sounds like it was fairly exhaustively researched in terms of a feature piece. I was interviewed for it.
Someone from this room, isn't it?
Yeah, I just said that. Yes. I was interviewed for it.
Add a layer of secrecy to the
whole
thing.
But this reporter, he came to like one of the Breezy Breakfast meetings and he talked to Guelph Today. And I assume he talked to Guelph Tribune. I haven't heard anything from that, but I know he did talk to people at Guelph Today. I think it'll be an interesting test case going forward, because we're expecting sometime later this fall the Canadian government to come back with some kind of option going forward. They're calling it a media bailout. But what it is kind of like, how do we create a sustained funding model for media going forward? And there was a special committee of the Heritage Ministry that came back with a number of recommendations, including taxing broadband internet, which...
That's not going to go over well, is it?
Well, it's not going to go over well because, first of all, how do most people get their news now? Second of all... internet is outrageously overpriced in Canada already.
Mm. Yeah.
The other options include, let me see here. Tax incentives for digital advertising doesn't help me. also, they called for controls on media consolidation. Probably too late for that.
There weren't any before? It sounds like
I know.
There's a lot that they let slide.
And then
right?
Another thing was adding more money to the media fund, the periodical fund, which goes to magazines, but they want to extend that to include newspapers and other periodicals. Again, doesn't help me.
No.
And then the other big piece was... supporting local news funding through the CRTC because there's the production, the Canadian Media Production Fund, which goes to TV and film, to support TV and film production in Canada. That comes off your cable bill. And I can't help but think, given what that does in terms of the Canadian media landscape, you think about Bell Media and Rogers and Shaw and how they fund Canadian productions. It's like, yeah, we'll make a show like Saving Hope.
Because we have to,
And we're going to advertise the heck out of it, and then we're going to run it for 3 weeks. And then when The Voice comes back, we're going to put it in that slot, and then we'll keep moving it around the dial, and you know, and then we'll brag about how we have Canadian productions. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but think that might be what happened, especially since a lot of the media companies, Globe and Mail, CTV, Global Television, City TV, are all owned by these same companies.
Yes. A division of, it's always a division of this, a division of that.
Yeah.
So the report that came out that's sort of speaking to this was called, great title, The Shattered Mirror. News, Democracy, and Trust in the Digital Age. It was done by Edward Greenspan, who's, I think he's with Bloomberg now, but he's been around the media. And the argument is that the dismantling of our traditional media, newspapers and television, whatnot, imperils the health of Canadian democracy, is the direct quote. So the argument is that if we don't try and sustain these regular channels that people used to get their news from, and content and Canadian stories, and this is where the CBC is a bit of a separate world. We're talking about, you know, Canadian magazines. The magazine, the periodical fund, was a big ask. They want that to go from 75 million, which I think is a lot of cake right now, to 350. Mm-hmm. So what do they want? Like, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really sure how that will enhance the magazine trade, because it's all shrinking. I got to say, on a personal note, I had sort of maintained my family's Toronto Star subscription, and just on a Sunday, and just to mention them again, as we have in every bit, to get the New York Times supplement, I canceled it because the paper was lying unopened, and I see it on my street. This is anecdotal stuff too. People get the trib in the bag, the flyer wrapper, straight in the bin. I've seen it in the blue bin, still in the plastic. Mm-hmm. So people aren't checking it out. I still do because I have a bit of nostalgia for newspapers and like them, but nostalgia can't keep it running. You see the papers on campus, even the smaller ones, Ontarian, Exclaim, which I still look at, even like Snap Guelph. You see stacks of it. If I don't know what's going on in Guelph, have a look at Snap Guelph and see what happened a month ago. Or can you look at it online and say, yep, Guelph today, yeah, this just happened. Guelph Mercury, this just happened minutes ago.
It's an interesting paradox, because when I get the sense, when people are out there talking about media, they're talking about papers. And at the same time, they don't seem to want to read the papers. It's bizarre that it seems that people only take the media in Guelph seriously if it comes on newsprint. And I've
like in the Globe and Mail this weekend, right? Is that it's going to be like
it'll be online too?
Yeah,
but
where I will look at it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But I got that sense when they had the book launch for Mercury Rising, and there were all these speeches, and it's like, yeah, isn't it too bad? Like, newspapers are gone. We don't have a daily newspaper anymore. It's like, we don't have news anymore. It's like, no, there's a ton of news out there. There's a ton of news out there, and yeah, you're going to have to do a bit more searching for it, and yeah, you're going to have to sort of learn media, how to be more media literate and to know what people's biases are and what biases that various news outlets are. So it's going to require a bit more work on the part of you, the reader, just as media, supporting media, is going to require a bit more work on the part of the reader, because people may miss the Mercury, but they don't miss not paying for it.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's one of those things, if you don't use it, you will lose it, because you can't maintain it. That wasn't the exclusive reason as to why the Mercury disappeared. I mean, if you know, the problem with this, the media fund, is that I don't think that this $350 million is going to create any more media for us. Is it going to maintain what's already there? Do you subsidize the Globe and Mail? Do you subsidize the National Post? Do you subsidize these? And I hate to say it, because I love them. I wanted to work in newspapers. They're dying. It's dying. Now, whether, you know, do we accept that? Is it like the blacksmith on the corner sees the horseless carriage going by and goes, "Wow, I should really get into fixing cars." You know, like
cars, those will never last.
Cars, they're going to be a thing of the
never be as reliable as a horse.
Thing of the 20th century. I think we have to see the writing on the wall here. So is this going to be? And the impression I get, this is like one last cash grab, one last sort of attempt to revive an industry that is pretty much on its last legs? I take it this will probably be in the article on the weekend as well. How does a...
It's a good question.
Yeah.
You know, are they trying to save media, or are they trying to, you know, create innovation? That seems to be... It seems to be the former rather than the latter. You're not really going to be, I don't think you're going to be fostering people to like go out there and try new things, or make these media companies go out there and try new things, because as we see, the immediate visceral reaction is to cut. And we see that with Bell Media, because have you seen sports on CTV Kitchener lately? No, they don't have a sports department anymore. And the sports guy is doing fill-in spots and going out there and talking to doing the local hero bits. You know, it's sad, but I have a feeling they're just going to take the money and run with it. And unless there are some kind of controls about, you know, not putting them towards executive salaries or something. And from what I gather, that might be what could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that CTV Kitchener is still there. And I'm putting up an over-the-air antenna probably this weekend. And I'm kind of looking forward to getting back to just that sort of limited universe of channels, because, you know, we've had satellite, won't mention who, for a long time. And it's like you're paying this ton of money and you're getting very little. You know, the stuff on there that I saw 30 years ago, I don't really want to watch it again. You know what I mean? So it's like we're all sort of finding our channels and you know, heading towards that where the news is streamed to us and we get it from where we get it from, be it, you know, the New York Times or Breitbart. I managed to mention New York Times in all four segments. There you go. But
they'll send you a nickel.
But, you know, and we all have our own filters and whatnot. But it's they need to do this, Melanie Jolie and company. For the 21st century.
Blake Lively and company.
Blake Lively and company. It's so true, though, isn't it? It's like, oh, it's Malaysia. No, it's Blake Lively.
Heritage Minister Blake Lively.
Yes.
French Blake Lively.
And then that picture where they met, that was fabulous.
It's yeah. Funny. I'm surprised it wasn't like a time cop thing where they can't occupy the same space. I do want to point this out, too. Somebody sent me this article about how Google is funding the creation of software that will write local news. It's like this AI
that
will like scan the internet and create local news, and then, you know, they're not taking the human factor out of it, because you still have to like check and edit and make sure everything's factual before publishing. It's like, great. So here, great news, Google. Thanks for building a robot to take more news jobs away. It's not like Google and Facebook have, you know, teamed up to take over most of the digital ad revenue in the universe. So, you know, maybe instead of putting that $1 million towards a new robot, you could have put it towards, you know, returning some of the the scratch you've eaten up over the years in terms of digital revenue, and so that people can pay.
Yeah, come on, $1 billion industry, give back, damn it, give back.
Yeah, so that made me laugh.
You're just going to have to count on us to
Google's
give you that
like,
kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guff. We'll give you the guff.
We'll give you the guff.
For free.
That's fine.
It's free. This
you know
is
who
a
else
free
is,
service.
You know who else we'll give the guff to? Liz Sandals. We have her booked for August the 10th. She will be back, the Guelph MPP and the Treasury Board President. She will be in studio then. We are working on some others. I have been in contact with the office of a certain area MP who is also a cabinet minister, and her last name rhymes with, I don't know, beggar?
Oh, I know who that is, but I...
Anyway,
we got our ear to the ground.
Well, we'll
here.
Try to keep you updated on all that on Open Sources, Guelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And of course, you can get the previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes and Stitcher. I will be back here next Thursday at 10 a.m. for End Credits, the movie news and review show. And you can connect with me on Twitter as well, at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I wrote a thing on the Spanner book that's getting some traction, talking local stuff. So spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour. I believe
actually,
it is a rerun. Oh, do we have
I have to say that Sounds Good to Me will not be in this evening, but there will be a repeat of the extensive interview on Creative Control, Vish Khanna's show, Creative Control, with Billy Bragg.
Oh.
A full hour with Billy Bragg.
Amazing.
Coming up who is also playing Hillside.
Well, that would be why.
He's the, I don't know if he's the top act on Sunday. He'll be around all weekend like everybody else, I think. So.
Well, Billy Bragg will sound good to us here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m.